Welcome to Libertarian Counterpoint. I am your host, James Just, and with me tonight is your my friend and author, Mr. John Cameron. John, your books are Rewire, Rekill, and your upcoming book is Aristocracy.
Yes.
So that's a good one. So look for those.
Look for those in the highest volume online retailer of ebooks. How about that? I didn't do a commercial plug just then.
Yeah. You know, find out those. You can learn about John and his writing style there.
Yes.
I almost forgot, Mr. Richardsfield. I told you I was going to have trouble today. It was going to be an interesting day. It's been a long week. It's going to be an even interesting, more interesting show tonight.
You were under the weather, and we appreciate you crawling out of the sick bed into your car and driving over here.
The whole 3 minutes over to the studio.
Well, it's still a drive. Yeah. And then the way people drive in Sacramento, you're at risk even with a 3 minute drive.
I wouldn't know. We'll talk about. We've got some interesting things on Sacramento and dining, outdoor dining coming up here later in the show. But we're going to talk first about why we can't trust the FBI. Now, for libertarians, this is an easy question, right? Why we can't trust the FBI? History is kind of why we can't trust the FBI. But Richard, our friend of the show, Mr. Richard Fields over there, why is it that we can't trust the FBI? Good Lord.
They can legally lie to you. You cannot legally lie to them. That's a felony. Reason number one. Reason number two is, J. Edgar Hoover, do we need to say more? That legacy has never left. Only the targets have changed. The targets of J. Edgar Hoover was a commie under every rock. The target of the current FBI is a neo-fascist under every rug. And if we lift up the rug and there isn't one, we'll put one there and get him to recruit other idiots to the cause and call it a conspiracy.
And may I add to that?
Sure, please.
Well, the FBI has been especially egregiously, stupidly lying. Snuffing, interfering with social media, snuffing an investigation, burying an investigation that should have happened with Joe Biden's son's laptop, and when that came out, writing a letter that was solicited by former. I thought for a minute my dog had snuck onto the set. If he followed me here, he's smarter than I thought. And they just, lots of lying, lots of skullduggery, lots of ignoring, congressional subpoenas and requests and questions, intimidating people that, come forward as whistleblowers who are protected by the law, and on and on and on. And it's been bad. It's getting worse. And they are acting as if They had the degree of autonomy that J. Edgar Hoover seized, and I think Richard was right, and he said that's never gone away. The FBI is supposed to be not the kingmaker or queenmaker. The FBI is supposed to be the servant of the people, and right now the FBI is trying to be the kingmaker, and they're certainly not our servants.
Well, and for those of you who've watched the show before, we've gone on and discussed the issues we've had with, lying in court, having the FBI lab, doctoring evidence, the FBI administrators and their lawyers simply ignoring exculpatory evidence. Mm-hmm. They do this all the time. And, they go after the, those who are socially, unfit. Mm. You don't fit well into society, then they kind of give them the tools they need to kind of act out against the society they don't really fit into, and then they charge them with terrorism or something goofy. Mm. They essentially create terrorists so they can pat themselves on the back for finding terrorists. And for those of us who have, we've been around, we watch these things, that we've seen these things happen before, we're going, well, how does anybody trust the FBI? I mean, you can go back to its very beginnings, and the FBI has been untrustworthy. The whole, the Untouchables was essentially that the FBI doesn't have to be
held accountable.
Yeah. That was the whole point. We can violate the law without the same consequences that an average person can violate the law. When, in theory, the United States, we're supposed to be a country of laws, but it's not laws if you're...
The FBI.
Yeah, if the FBI. Yeah. It's...
Well, the problem really is we're a country of laws, way too many laws. There's a Harvard professor, a liberal Harvard professor, that wrote a book, Three Felonies a Day, and he alleged, and with pretty good evidence, and was able to pretty well document it, that we're all guilty of at least three felonies a day, and not even knowing that we are. No less than Chuck Schumer, Democratic Majority Leader in the Senate, said that if the federal intelligence agencies, now there's 17 or 18 of them, one of which is the FBI, want to get you, they will. There is absolutely no question that if the federal government decides that they have a target on your back, they will find something they can nail on you. And if they can't find something, they'll manufacture something. I think the case of the kidnappers of Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, is a good example. The yahoos that were roped into doing that had no intention whatsoever of kidnapping of the governor of Michigan. They were talked into it by an FBI plant. And that's kind of the modus operandi. If you want to get along with whoever the administrative state favors, don't mess up or don't mess with the FBI. They'll figure out a way to get you. And I know I'm sounding paranoid, but that's just the way it is.
Well, even paranoids have enemies. And I want to ask this question, and I'm not a Trump fan at all. So the so-called insurrection, the so-called violent insurrection, where there was very little violence, despite being about a million people there. I'm not going to say by show of hands. I'm pretty confident that there were lots and lots of FBI agent instigators in that crowd. And that I'm actually fairly confident without them there, the Capitol wouldn't have been breached. And, it actually hurts me to say that, you know, I mean, I can't imagine a world, although we're living in it. If you were to sit down, you know, 20 years ago and try to pitch a book to a publisher with the stuff that the FBI has done and is doing, they would turn it down as unbelievable. They would. And yet we're seeing it every single day.
Yeah, we see more and more unbelievable. And, you know, if we are held to a vastly different standards than the agents of the government, then we're no longer free. I think that's a clear indication. You know, if there's vastly different standards between, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, then nobody's equal. And I think that's kind of where we're sitting at today.
And now the servants are once again, obviously, the masters.
And speaking of servants being the masters, Randy Weingarten only taught for 3 years, and now she's going to receive 15 years of public pensions. And this is part of the problem with these public unions and the public pensions, is it not?
Yeah.
It's that we're setting up, you can work for a handful of years, and then you get a pension for 15, 20 years at taxpayers' expense.
Hmm. Yeah.
And rather than your own expense.
And Randy Weingarten, head of the second largest teachers union, is now trying to backpedal and gaslight us into thinking that she and her union weren't responsible for destroying 2 years of education that the youth of this country will never catch up. And she's going to, you know, retire well on the public largesse. She makes a heck of a living, and she will never be held accountable for any of that stuff. So, you know, the fact that the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for her living a very large life after, you know, basically destroying the intellectual wherewithal of millions of kids who are the kids of taxpayers strikes me as being immoral. It's evil. Yeah. Well, if anything, she should.
Well, I mean, the basic problem employee unions, of which the teachers union is one, is that you have public employees negotiating with other public employees about how big their salaries and benefits are going to be. And the natural inclination is to say, oh, really big. You know, city council, school boards, all of them want to be a part of that revolving door that allows them to do things like what Randy Weingartner has done. What she's doing is perfectly legal. I mean, that the laws were written in such a way that she was able to get comp time or whatever they call it for 10 or 15 year, or, you know, tenure. I think she taught for three, subbed for a couple. The other 10 years were comp time because she was serving as a union representative, and that's comped as teaching time by agreement between the teachers union and the public school systems. So you have a situation where when you've got public employees negotiating with other public employees, they're going to make sure that they all get taken care of very nicely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and they're paying off the politicians, right? That's where that's why they want more public employees, so they can pay off.
And the politicians can't get elected without the support of public school or public unions. Witness what happened to Jeff Hewitt down in Riverside County. He was able to get elected, but once elected, he was not able to get reelected because of a huge, well-funded, a stupendous effort by public unions. That's what did him in.
Yeah, because public unions know where they're going to get their money from, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to get their money from people who aren't beholden to them. If you take the left, the Democrats' own strategies, their own sayings to heart, where, you know, money in politics, well, it's they don't care about money in politics. They care about other people's money in politics. They like their money in politics because it buys them exactly what they want.
Yeah.
But if you have money in politics, then they complain about it, how evil money in politics is, how it buys policy. But they're perfectly fine buying policy. They just don't want you buying policy. I think that's kind of the
that's well put. Yeah.
Nothing's well put with me tonight, John.
No,
apparently,
I understood it. I think our our thousands of viewers are giving us thumbs up that they understood it as well.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, here we got something we might not understand. Josh Hawley wants the debt ceiling deal to include a massive tax hike on Americans to pay for it, allegedly. Or just really, they're just going to pay for more spending. We all know how that actually happens. Even if they did raise the taxes, they're just going to make it as an excuse to spend more. Or am I wrong?
Well, in this case, it's Richards, I think, more well-versed on tariffs than I am. But he basically, that massive tax hike in his case, I'm catching your lack of ability to speak here, is because he wants to throw, an extra 25% tariff on stuff from China. Until we have a trade balance with China, which we know will never, ever, ever happen because we've made it illegal to manufacture things, at least in the state of California. So I think Richard should probably speak about tariffs and how evil this sneaky little tax, even though it's not a tax, what kind of evil it will create for Americans.
Yeah, the thing you have to remember about tariffs or about trade, fundamentally, when you have trade between countries, there will always, never, I mean, there will always be an imbalance. There's never a balance of trade. There's a balance of payments, and the balance of payments is always in perfect balance. We have been sending dollars to China. They've been sending us stuff. It's a great deal. And Josh Hawley, because he wants to play to the uneducated rubes who don't understand economics, is saying, well, you know, we're going to save, they're not going to save any jobs. All they're doing is raising taxes on consumers in the United States, reducing the amount of jobs. Can you put a tariff on, you know, for instance, steel, put an import tariff on steel. That'll help the steel industry domestically, but it'll cost more. It'll raise the price of steel and steel fabricators, people who use steel intermediary good, they're going to spend more. And so unemployment in the steel fabricators industry will go down, even though employment in the actual steel industry goes up. And it's going to be there will be more jobs lost than jobs gained whenever you put a tariff on anything. And to assume that you can have a balance of trade is just economic nonsense. It always has been, always will be. Josh Hawley is in the same camp of economic ignoramuses as Bernie Sanders. And in fact, they're both in favor of higher tariffs for China. It's just playing to the rubes who don't understand economics, and they are part of the rubes.
Yeah, the end consumer pays all costs. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
It's kind of the natural way economics work. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in business. If the end consumer doesn't pay all costs, then who does? Mm-hmm. So it's the end consumer pays all costs. And so if you have a tariff or a tax, if it can be passed on, it will. And the only people who can't pass it on are wage workers, right? People who get paid an hour. Those are the only people who can't pass their costs on. And so whether it's a tax on Chinese goods, it's really just a tax at your store. That's all that is actually going to end up being.
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to skip for a second. Wealth taxes in Denmark, I believe.
Norway.
Norway.
Have produced the results that libertarians will tell you what is going to happen. The rich have moved. They've just left. Because wealth taxes are silly. You're taxing essentially the theoretical value of people's stuff. And the theoretical value of people's stuff is completely arbitrary based upon the willingness of somebody else to buy it.
Yeah.
And so until someone actually buys stuff, it has no real value. It's theoretical. And so if you're a rich person and they want to attack your theoretical value, you're just going to move and take your stuff with you.
Unless you're a U.S. citizen, because if you move formally, they take 28% of your stuff at current value for the privilege of moving. So, like, you know, Tina Turner moved to, I think, Switzerland and got a Swiss passport, but never gave up her U.S., so they wouldn't take her 28%. And, you know, lots of rich Norwegian businessmen, because they don't, take 28% of your stuff when you move out of the country, have, you know, relocated to places like Switzerland and other tax havens because it kills them to live in the country that is so well off because of the wealth they created. So, and, you know, the idea that you're going to put a wealth tax on, this is actually a tax on income in this case, but, you know, a tax on the unappreciated value or a tax on the unrealized value of anything is crazy, because even if you implemented it, and 1 year the value of assets goes up, and then you have something like, pandemic, and the value of everything goes down, and so these people then have a tax loss carry forward. So they're not going to pay any taxes during the period of time where you don't have other people paying taxes. So it's lunacy, and anybody that proposes it's a lunatic. And that Margaret Thatcher misquote, you know, socialism is a wonderful thing until you run out of other people's money. She didn't actually say that, but she said something along those lines. It just doesn't work. It's never worked. It's been tried elsewhere. You can tell the end is nigh when a country passes a wealth tax. And Norway is sitting on the biggest pot of money out there. They've got the best funded public pension system in the world. They've got a well-educated populace. They're one of the happiest places in the world. They're up on the standard of economic freedom. They're way up there, way above the U.S. So the idea that they're stupid enough to do that is kind of scary. Anyway,
it's just frankly silly trying to tax theoretical value is I can't think of anything more than silly. Well, what is not silly is a federal report has half of public school students are now performing below grade level. And quite frankly, I'm shocked that it's that high, considering. But maybe that's because we're here in California and we're just seeing our awful schools here. You know, I think a majority of California's students can't read at grade level. And I think this is another example of that. I forget the exact details about how disastrous California schools are, but if you're a poor person in California, you're stuck with your zip code tyranny, I don't want to say you're screwed, but you're screwed.
I was thinking of that word myself.
I was trying to think of a better word a more polite word for public access.
Your chances of your child making their way in the world with the tools they need, reading, writing, arithmetic, have definitely been reduced. And the tyranny, we talked about, you know, teachers' unions earlier, the teachers' unions in this country keeping schools closed versus Sweden that kept them open, and just about every country in Europe, even people that are the liberals in this country like to hold up as liberal paragons of virtue. English schools were open, even though they mistakenly did the 6 feet of spacing and all the rest of that. The Swedes, I don't think, closed them down at all. And their kids don't have those gaps in education. And they were way further ahead than our kids, especially California kids, at the start of this thing. So
I'm kind of surprised that it worked out that way. I would have thought that getting kids out of government schools and homeschooling them would increase their literacy. But I guess the problem with that theory, and the reason it didn't work out that way, is because most parents are working. Mm. Both mother and father are working. Why are most parents working and not one person staying at home to take care and homeschool the kids? Because we have such high tax levels that it's necessary for both parents to work. Mm. It wasn't that way back in my lifetime. And, you know, I'm pretty old, but in the 50s, you know, and earlier, one income families were the norm. Mm. And, you know, and homeschooling could make sense with one person staying home to take care of the kids. But that, you know, that's just not a viable alternative anymore. It takes two incomes to make a go of it. Well, so, I would love to say that homeschooling would be the answer, but until we are able to get tax rates down a bit, it's a while. It's going to be a while.
Well, the distance schooling that the inefficient, ineffective distance schooling that the public schools and especially California imposed upon their students basically transferred the duties of the teacher onto the parents. And, you know, there are many stories of people, teachers, quote unquote, teaching from Belize and places like that while Richard couldn't get there, but apparently some teachers could. On the bright side, these school pods and all the rest showed, and unschooling, the whole unschooling thing showed people that if they had the resources to apply to their kids outside of school, they could outperform. And that's always been the case. There's an untold number of stories of homeschool kids getting into Harvard and, you know, blowing the SATs out of the water and outperforming their peers from regular schools. But, you know, when you force unprepared parents to take on the roles of teachers using horrible resources that they're forced to use by law,
that's what you're going to get. That's the point. You didn't just transfer kids to homeschooling or to unschooling or to some other faction. They just kind of all of a sudden threw them all into this pot of what is it? Public schools at home. It wasn't even like a fundamental, online education is its actual thing.
It was kind of like the worst of both worlds, public school, but in the home.
Yeah.
With no discipline.
Yeah, it was crazy because online education is an actual thing, but they didn't try to do online education. They tried to just try to transfer the classroom setting to online, and of course it was going to fail. And then when you have parents who weren't bought in yet, you know, they weren't prepared. They just kind of were thrown under the bus. It was, you know, those families who were prepared to adapt adapted well, and those who didn't, you know, really
should. But I think the larger point to make here is that, you know, like we said, starting back in 2020, when this whole pandemic scaremongering story started, we said that there will be unforeseen, not really unforeseen, there will be unintended, supposedly unintended consequences. Everything is a trade-off. The trade-off between the supposed, and I emphasize the word supposed, benefit of 6 feet apart and you know, wearing masks all the time and, you know, all of the pandemic response techniques was that there would be economic problems. And the lack of schooling is just one of many. The actual excess death rate in the United States and other countries that have the most rigid pandemic responses was higher than in countries like Sweden, where it was pretty much laissez-faire, at least as far as pandemic quarantine restrictions are concerned.
So we're going to move on real quick before we end the show. Sacramento Alfresco Dining, talking about more pandemics, has crumbled. During the pandemic, we all ate outside, even though half the time it was inside. And it has crumbled since then. Mm. And, you know, they're asking why. And I said, well, because eating outdoors is not as fun as people think it is.
Well, and I think it is actually pretty fun. But this is a Sacramento Bee article. So, of course, they tried they didn't spell out that the government is making it much harder for people to do alfresco dining now than they used to, and that they've attached fees and taxes and watchdogs to it. And one of them is quoting as saying, "Well, I don't know why they're not doing it. We tell them exactly what they need to do it all. If they want to do it, all they got to do is follow the rules." Well, the rules have changed. Because the outdoor dining scene in Sacramento was wonderful for a while. I mean, it was, you know, party central outside, and we have the weather to do it. And there are countries where that is the norm, and it's wonderful to walk through the town squares in Italy in the spring and fall and summer and see people sitting outside having these meals with family and friends. But you know, when you make it basically not quite illegal, but when you make it more expensive and much harder to do, of course people are going to say, I'm a poor restaurateur. I can't pay more fees and taxes so that people can sit outside.
If you have to go jump through, if you have to be a gymnast to jump through the hoops, then you're just not going to do it, right? Yep. I think that's kind of the thing, Richard.
Which of course wasn't spelled out in the Bee article. They tried to hide that. But
well, of course, they always try to hide
the truth,
the implications of their policies, you know, that they promote, the policies that Bee Very promotes, end up creating the problems that they claim to be against, and they, as usual, brush it under the rug that they had anything to do with it. I think.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You got anything to add there, Richard?
Yeah, and my only addition, you know, is just the old maxim that if you want something to go away, regulate the hell out of it or tax the hell out of it or both.
And we are out of time, so we're going away. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, John. And thank you all for being here tonight.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, James.
And please remember to love everybody. Good night.